The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt. We are in the midst of an Omicron wave. If you haven't figured that out yet, you will know it by the end of the day. Exponential growth is something you cannot ignore. And exponential growth is happening. This is not, as far as I can tell, a major concern to people who have been vaccinated, have a booster. You may get sick. I will probably get sick. You'll test positive. I don't want to say sick. You'll test positive. But if you get sick, it won't be that bad. Cleveland Browns have, 500 people on the COVID list. The commissioner of the NFL should cancel that game. Someone's going to get hurt. It's like sending in Dwayne to play, or Carl. Carl would be the quarterback, and Dwayne would be the running back. I am not available. I just wouldn't want to do that to the other team. But they're going to have people get hurt because it's the replacements. They ought to send in Cadel Reeves and let him play. It's absurd. And if the game, if they postpone it, they can't play it, and it matters for the playoffs, flip a coin. That's more fair to the fans than a beatdown.
Could you imagine Carl in the huddle?
Oh, no. We'd never, every play would be a flag.
You know what it would sound like in the huddle?
Play well, down, Poppy.
That's exactly, every one of us would be saying, say it, play it again.
Play down, Poppy.
Yeah, if Carl's in the huddle, that would happen. Carl's our friend who's retired and sends us alarming critiques of the show because he's got nothing else to do now. I'm telling you, it's really sad. Any bother in his grandson who says to him,
"Play dumb, Poppy."
So now our hashtag PDP just is a way of telling Carl that. Any event, the Browns and the Rams and other clubs, I guess the Bears had six go down there, the canary in the coal mine, Omicron is everywhere, just like it is in Great Britain. Go get vaccinated. If you haven't been vaccinated, go get a booster. If you haven't had a booster, you're going to wish you had because everyone's going to get it. And you'll test positive and the world will go on. I went back and forth to Minnesota. I'm not going to stop traveling until someone from the CDC, and it better not be Anthony Fauci, stands up in front of the audience and says, you are at grave risk of death or hospitalization from Omicron, even if you've been vaccinated and get a and have had a booster, because I don't think I am. And nobody in the government's told me otherwise. But that's what's happening. Build Back Better is dead, at least for this year. I don't know if it'll be like Fatal Attraction. It could be. In the United Kingdom, a by-election was held. That means they had to fill a seat for a member of parliament who had to resign because of a scandal. A seat that the Tories have held for 200 years, and they got blown out by Labour. Blown out. Like a five-alarm fire in Great Britain this morning. Because Boris Johnson's incompetence, his social distancing from the truth, as Keir Starmer put it, his antics, the hypocrisy of Christmas 2020, the new lockdown, and the tax hike, which broke the platform of the Tories, have all combined to create the perfect storm for Tories. And if they have a by-election, they'll get blown out again. Now, they won't throw them out until after Christmas. I don't think there's not enough time before Christmas. Although, William Pitt the Younger was put into office in 1784 in December. They called it the Mince Ministry because, like mince pie, it wouldn't last after Christmas. And it lasted for 19 years. So, I think it was 19 years. I'm recalling from memory from Andrew Roberts' book. But Pitt the Younger was 24. So look at the 24. Jim Byron took over the Nixon Library. He might become the leader of the Conservative Party. We'll see. Jim is young. And he's great. And he's smart. He's like the Pitt the Younger of not-for-profits. France has said no to UK tourists. I was in Minnesota the night that storms arrived in Iowa and Wisconsin that killed five people. We heard them. I was, thanks to Kurt Schlichter, who was in for me yesterday, by the way, made news, great job, did a great work. Thank you, Kurt. He's always a very enthusiastic person at 3 o'clock in the morning in California when the show comes on. I'm never amazed at how he does that. And he and Rick Scott made some news. I very much, you know, when you make news, that's the key thing. We made news in Minnesota because of my first question. In fact, let's play the start of that if we can. I'll play the end of it afterwards. Here's the question that's caused many stories to be written. Cut number 16.
I'll have four questions. Second round, I'll begin with you, Dr. Jensen. Before we look forward, let's look back to the election of 2020. In your opinion, did President Biden win a constitutional majority in the Electoral College? If yes, how definitive is your conclusion? And if no, would you please explain which states you think are in dispute and why? And I'll begin with you, Dr. Jensen.
Okay, now we're not going to play the whole thing. I just wanted you to hear the question because I repeated it a number of times. I think four out of the six candidates. And the question is exactly, I want to make sure I say it the right way. Did President Biden win a constitutional majority in the Electoral College? If yes, how definitive is your conclusion? If no, please explain which states you think are in dispute and why. All six of them sidestepped it, though. Senator Gazelka answered, we use the Electoral College, he won. And Senator Benson said, on the only time I followed up on a question, because she didn't answer the question the first time around, was he was certified. I think that is an unusual answer for all five of them to give. Perhaps I caught it wasn't the first question. The first question was, why are you the most electable candidate? And mine was the second question. But we had a rule, no follow-ups. And we had a rule. I did two, and then John and Kyle did one each, and then I did two, and then they did one each, that sort of thing. So I kept to it. But it is good. I've written a column about it, which will come out tomorrow, about how I would answer it. But I'm not running for any office. It's not really up to me to answer it. I think Joe Biden won the election. I think rather clearly that there isn't one state, much less the three or four, that must be in doubt anywhere. And there was never any state in doubt anywhere in a judicially cognizable way. So President Biden is President Biden. But I'm very alarmed by the improvisations that were made in voting rules. And I'm very supportive of making it easy to vote and hard to cheat in 2022. That's the answer. It takes less than 75 seconds. That's my answer. It's not the answer. That wasn't their answer, and it's launched 1,000 ships. I'll talk about it later with Josh Mandel's coming in. I don't know if Josh is going to agree with me on that. Continuing with the rundown. Mexico says U.S. tax breaks for electric vehicles risk fueling migration. That is not intuitive, if you ask me. Mexico says planned U.S. tax breaks for electric vehicles, which was in Build Back Better, still is in Build Back Better, but Build Back Better is on life support, risk fueling migration. Bruce Springsteen sells his music to Sony Music Group for $500 million. Bruce isn't about the money at all. He's about horses. Facebook, other researchers step up to fight against cyber spying for hire. I have to tell people this particular, and the United States, by the way, has sanctioned China for the developing of brain control weaponry. Bravo, U.S. That's a good thing. I have to tell people about a story the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt told me when I got back. A lady of our acquaintance who's sharp and smart and has two sharp, smart daughters got taken for thousands of dollars in a phone call scam by a caller purporting to be from Amazon telling her account had been linked. Whenever it gets around to someone telling you you have to send gift cards or give you on the phone and, you know, transfixed, hypnotize this person, a smart person. If anyone calls you up and says you need to talk to me, your account's been hacked, hang up. That's not what people do. That's not how these organizations contact you if you've been hacked. That doesn't happen. Number, just hang up. You don't have to be rude. You don't have to answer the phone. If you don't know the person who's calling you, don't answer the phone. They're using spoofing technology as well. And the moment anyone ever mentions buy a gift card to you, you must understand it's a fraud. Okay, it's a fraud. I have a new piece over at the Washington Post. It's not on the front page yet. It's a piece about Wang Huning, who's one of the seven most powerful people in China and is the brain of Xi Jinping. And it begins, pray for Wang Huning. He is the most dangerous person most folks have never heard of. And he's remaking China, and he's disappearing people, and he has a plan. And it's not one that's good for you or me, no matter if you're a Democrat or a Republican, a liberal or a Democrat. If you live anywhere in the West, Wang Huning wants you to do what he wants, and he's working on it. And he's really, really smart. So head to Washington Post or Google Hugh Hewitt and Washington Post. It'll come up. We'll come back and check markets. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt. If you're buying gold, do it from Birch Gold. You can find Birch Gold at HughGold.com. I'm glad that they're sponsoring the podcast, but more importantly, I'm glad you're looking at making sure that your investment portfolio is diversified. Wealth is made in concentration and preserved in diversification, and you should diversify a part of your portfolio, 5 to 10% in gold. You can do that by rolling over a portion of your IRA or 401k into a gold and silver and other precious metals depository maintained by Birch Gold. Or you can just buy gold and put it in your safety deposit box. Either way, do it from Birch Gold, which you can find at HughGold.com, or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's HughGold.com, or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. Now enjoy this podcast.
In America.
Buying on credit is so nice.
One look at us and they charge twice.
I have my own washing machine.
Welcome back, America. 1957. Leonard Bernstein, Stephen Sondheim, Arthur Lorentz, and Jerome Robbins brought West Side Story to the stage. It became a movie in 1961. 60 years later. Steven Spielberg brings it back to the big screen, and Sonny Bunch liked it, our the official movie critic of the Hugh Hewitt Show, who was suspicious a week ago, thinking, I'm not really a musical guy. What'd you think, Sonny? Tell us all.
Well, I said last week I liked it. I mean, it's a very, look, if I like a musical, it's probably one of the five best musicals ever made, because I'm not a musical guy. It's just a good movie. Like, Steven Spielberg is a good director. He knows how to film a set piece, and this film is a series of very intricately and exquisitely done set pieces.
Your Washington Post review was particularly good because it taught me a few things I didn't know about why the Lincoln Center reboot is so important, and how this actually focuses more on what was going on, less turf for the same number of gang members. In other words, it's a great review, Sonny. Yeah. I liked it for that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's an interesting movie. I mean, look, it's an interesting movie because I don't want to compare it to the original or the original stage version, because I'm not super interested in those, but what this movie is doing is essentially, I don't want to put words in the mouths of Tony Kushner, who's a screenwriter, or Steven Spielberg, who's a director, but it's a movie that is essentially making an argument against assimilation and essentially the impossibility of assimilation. Now, I find this to be a very defeatist and regressive view of how America works, and this is it's a tragedy. It's based on Romeo and Juliet, but beyond that, it is tragic in the sense that it is a movie that very much kind of does not really believe in the idea of America. I mean, you played the song America leading me in here, which is one of the classic tunes from the show. There's a character in this movie, who sings that song, who's the lead singer on that song, by film's end, is saying, she has a line that's something like, I'm not American. I am Puerto Ricano, and it's tragic. It's a look at, somebody who has kind of lost faith in the American ideal. I describe that as in my Washington Post piece, I said it's a very regressive point of view. It's a very,
and
like,
Sonny, what I appreciate about your Post piece, I am the average movie viewer. I can hum tonight, and I kind of remember. I've seen the show twice, and I've seen the old movie, but I don't know anything about the movie. I forget stuff about movies. I remember stuff about politics. And so when you pointed out that the Rita Moreno character is new, and that it's an ambivalent character, and indeed it's a defeated character, I said, this is why I read reviews after movies, because that is a sharp point.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good movie. It's an interesting movie, but I do think I am not fully supportive of, you know, the basic message of it. Which is
people should read the review because assimilation works. I was just I was just in Minnesota on Wednesday night. Minnesota is fully Swedish and Norwegian. Now, the only people who were crazy enough to go up there were the people from Norway and Sweden. But they assimilated. It's just, you know, they're Vikings fans. So assimilation does work eventually. What else do we have to see, Sonny?
Well, so the big movie out this weekend, and the big movie of the year, really, is Spider-Man No Way Home. I mean, this movie is going to be an enormous, enormous hit. I saw it yesterday with a packed house at the Alamo Draft House near me. Audience loved it. Spider-Man No Way Home, of course, stars Spider-Man. It's got Tom Holland as Spider-Man. And if folks remember the end of the last movie, his identity had been revealed to the world by J. Jonah Jameson, who was playing a kind of Alex Jones-like figure, you know, kind of a conspiracy theorist, doing a very funny turn by J.K. Simmons. But this movie picks up right where that one left off. So everybody knows that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. Spider-Man is Peter Parker. He's got to try and figure out a way to get the world to forget about him. And he turns to Doctor Strange, who is played by Benedict Cumberbatch. Benedict Cumberbatch casts a spell that tries to reverse, you know, erase the knowledge that Peter Parker is Spider-Man from.
You know, Doctor Strange should be smarter than this.
You would think. He's warned not to cast the spell by his assistant / sorcerer, the new Sorcerer Supreme, Benedict Wong. He does it anyway. He casts the spell and it messes up the very fabric of reality. Villains from previous iterations of Spider-Man movies start pouring into Tom Holland Spider-Man's universe, the Green Goblin, Dr. Octopus, the Lizard, Electro. You know, these are
hello, Peter. That's a great trailer, by the way. Hello, Peter.
It's a really good trailer. I'm not giving away anything that's not in the trailer.
Yep, so I'm careful not to either.
These are no spoilers here, really. Peter's got to get them back to their universe. That's all I'll say about that, about the plot. This movie is a little bit overstuffed, and it's a little bit overlong at, you know, in 2 hours and 40 minutes, something like that. And it's got, you know, a mid-credit scene and a spoiler, so you got to sit through the whole thing, or a mid-credit scene and a, you know, post-credit scene. You got to sit through the whole thing. Don't leave the theater right away. But I really, really liked it. I really enjoyed it. It is it's very funny. It's surprisingly poignant at moments. And it has just enough fan service to be entertaining without being cloying. I really enjoyed this film, and if judging by the people in my audience, everybody else seemed to love it too. I mean, this is
now, Sonny, I'm afraid it's going to get crushed by Omicron.
No, I don't think it will. I really don't think it will. I'll put it this way. I haven't seen movie theaters add showings for a movie like I've seen them add showings for Spider-Man since
last week's
Avengers
news.
Endgame. I mean,
I agree. Look, I want to go see it, and I'm not changing my life because I've got two vaccines and a booster. But the exponential growth in Great Britain, 80,000 cases a day in London, France cutting off the Brits, and the NFL staggering around with 30 players on COVID lists. It's here, and it grows exponentially. And you know what exponential growth? You're one of the people that understand it. I just don't think it's going to make it to the weekend.
I don't know. I get the sense that people are kind of over it. I get the sense that people don't care about cases so much as they do hospitalizations and deaths.
Agree.
At this point.
Agree. And maybe there are enough people vaccinated, but the kids who drive this are not vaccinated by and large, because moms are a little bit more suspicious about this whole thing because Fauci and gang have screwed up the messaging so completely that nobody trusts anybody on anything.
Yeah, but kids, I mean, kids have not had anything to worry about from this disease in any of its variants. So, maybe Omicron hurts it in theaters. I don't know. I don't think it's going to be that big a deal, honestly, just looking, again, looking.
I hope you're right. Not going to stop me.
But
again, I think that's last week's health news and this week's movie news turn into next week's disappointment, and they shouldn't pull it from theaters. That's my point. No one should pull anything from theaters as on the basis of this week's box office and next week's box office. And then if South Africa is any guide, we'll be through it in 3 weeks. It'll be gone.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be – I do not think that this is going to be a huge problem at the box office for this movie. I mean, there are other movies that might hurt.
What else is out? We have 2 minutes.
Story. West Side Story, the audience that needed to show up for that movie was older audiences and women, and they did not show up. It only grossed $10 million its opening weekend, which is kind of a disaster.
Wow. And for Spielberg? Wow.
Yeah, there's another movie out this weekend, Nightmare Alley, which is Guillermo del Toro's remake of the 1947 classic noir about a series of grifters, basically. One works in a carnival, and he hooks up with a grifter psychiatrist.
They're heavily promoting that movie on Twitter. I can't turn on Twitter without seeing that. It's annoying. I do not think you should promote movies on Twitter. It annoys people. What do you think?
Well, I think that you have to promote movies on Twitter because people, I mean, how else? So here's a weird thing, right, is that I don't know how people see ads for movies anymore except for Twitter. People don't watch live TV as much. People aren't driving around. They aren't seeing billboards, right? It's hard to get to people where they are, and where people are is on Twitter. So they promote the heck out of these things on social media. And that's the, you know, that's how you create awareness for something like this.
Twitter with constant repetition of a trailer that it's a bad trailer on Twitter. It might be a great trailer in a movie, but they're going to have to learn how to adapt a trailer to a 3 second look, if that long.
Well, yeah, that's certainly a problem. But you know, they're releasing this movie on the same weekend as No Way Home, which is a big strike against it just to begin with. But it is a movie that is aimed at slightly older audiences. I think it's a movie that needs adults to show up, not kids. And I'd be a little surprised if it really took off at the box office.
Sonny Bunch, we will look for your review of that. Is that going to be in the post as well?
No, I believe I should have a review of Nightmare Alley up at the Bulwark right now. Okay. But I haven't checked the site this morning yet.
Bulwark goes to the movies and across the movie aisle. Sonny Bunch, find them, enjoy them. Sonny Bunch, enjoy your weekend. I am here to tell you that if you're going to be outside, and most of you should be outside, relieffactor.com will make it easier for you to be outside doing the activity that you have planned for this weekend. I do not think the country, at least the vaccinated part of the country, is going back into hiding. I just don't think they're going to. They might get a mild form of COVID if they've been vaccinated, having a booster, but they're not going to stop walking, they're not going to stop running, and they're not going to stop shopping, I don't think. I think they might stop going to movies, but Relief Factor is terrific. It's wonderful. You should try it. You should take it, and you should tell your friends about it. Thousands of people take Icarin, Curcumin, Resveratrol, and Omega every single morning. Nobody brought it up to me in Minnesota. That's the first event I've done in years that no one came up and talked to me about relieffactor.com. Maybe because I anticipated it on the air. My audience at AM 1280 The Patriot is loyal, 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 and they are sold, sold, sold on Relief Factor, Relief Factor, Relief Factor. So, $19.95 gets you started. Go over there. Please also remember that we have got a new movie over at Salem Now, which is pretty interesting. Now, I'm an evangelical Roman Catholic, but the movie How the Left is Stealing Your Church, it's a documentary. It's on woke ideology in the evangelical community. Now, I'm an evangelical Roman Catholic Presbyterian, which means I'm not shy about my faith. I go to Mass on Saturday or early Sunday, and I go to the Presbyterian Church where we have a wonderful pastor. My churches aren't woke, but a lot of evangelical churches are woke. And if you go to Salem Now right now, How the Left is Stealing Your Church is only at salemnow.com.
The weather outside is frightful.
Welcome back, America. Doug Lamorese with Cleveland.com is host of three different podcasts. He has co-hosts, of course. The College Football Survivor Pod, Orange and Brown Talk Pod, and the Buckeye Talk Pod. And they say Buckeye Talk better than anyone. But I'm not going to talk about College Football Survivor, Doug, because I'm a homer for the Browns, and I'm very angry at the NFL for pretending there's a game going to occur on Saturday. I think they ought to call it off for any team when 11 starters in the previous 2 weeks are on the COVID list. What say Doug Lamorese?
Yeah, here we are not at the same place we were last year with trying to deal with and play through and figure out what to do with the virus, right? That I do think we're at a world where, you know, last year they kind of just had to close their eyes and put their head down and say, listen, this is crazy. We're trying our best to keep everybody healthy, but we just got to play. We got to play through no matter what. And I think we're at a point now where competitive balance can matter, right, Hugh? That it's like sports, people care about sports a lot, and that's okay. That's what our society has decided. Sports is really important. And so I think they are still living with some of the thought processes of a year ago, and it's, you know, trying to figure out what's fair for the season, I think, does matter. So I agree with you. I don't think it's just close your eyes and tough noogies if half your starters are out.
Yeah, and I speak as a Browns fan since 65, so I've never seen a Super Bowl. This is a Super Bowl potential year. And I am a season ticket holder since 1999. I've been paying the freight since 1999 for four tickets. And Roger Goodell just wants to get the money in the door, and the owners just want to get the money in the door. It's not even safe. And Baker Mayfield took last – I think he makes a perfectly great point. I'd like to hear your commentary on this. Our guys are going to get myrtleized if they put out Keno Reeves is going to play quarterback. The replacements are in there. It's going to be – who's going to play quarterback?
Nick Mullins, their third stringer who played for the Niners a few years ago.
If he doesn't get COVID. But he was at the walkthrough yesterday, right?
Right.
Hugh talk, not Buckeye talk, not Orange and Brown talk, not College Football Survivor Show talk. Hugh talk. This is nuts. Now, does Cleveland share this? You know, the writers are kind of hesitant to say this, and I think the fans don't want to be seen as cowardly. The Browns can do anything. But what in your heart? It's not a football game.
No, it's there is a safety issue, right? That there's COVID safety, but there is also on the field protecting your bodies. We're putting people in situations they shouldn't be in. Safety. That is a valid point by Baker Mayfield, but you know these guys put their brains and bodies on the line. 17 weeks a year, they work year round at it, and then to put themselves in a situation where you have a chance to blow a hole in their season over something like this, I do think there are other possible solutions out there. Now, they have tweaked one of the protocols so that it increases the chances of some of the guys who are currently on the COVID list maybe being able to play Saturday because they only need one negative test to come back and play instead of two. So that was an adjustment they have made in light of this, but that they seem so absolutely steadfast against the idea of any kind of postponement when a year ago they did move some games back to give teams more time. I don't know, Hugh. I'm a little confused by it. My only thought must be, do they think this is going to happen to a bunch of other teams in future weeks and then they'll wind up postponing more games? So, again, it's close your eyes, tough noogies, but I don't think they're handling this the right way at the moment.
Worst case scenario for Browns fans, the league will not be able to ignore exponential growth in COVID positives by next week, and they'll start postponing. But that'll be too late to save the people who get busted up on the field. Doug, my suggestion, just want your hot take on this, is look, postpone it if it mattered for the playoffs and you can't, you know, flip a coin. You know, I would be happier as a fan with that result for the playoffs. Flip a coin, 50-50, and, you know, win-loss, We're not going to judge the Raiders and the Browns based upon the people they... And the same is true about the Raiders. I think the Rams are worse off. I'll give you the last minute, Doug. But I think the NFL is frozen, and they're not a quick reaction. If they were a quarterback, they'd be sacked every time.
It's a difficult situation, right? We all admit that. We're all going to be sorting through what do we do with this new wave that's coming. But this is a multi-billion dollar business that it's one of the most high-profile, big-money things in American society, and they should be more nimble. They really should. And I do think your idea just – if you just call it, and then if they wind up playing one fewer game, you go by win percentage. It's like a tie, right? I mean, the Steelers and Lions tied.
That's even better than a coin flip. That's better than a coin flip. Yep.
I think that would be, and that's better than a team playing without half its starters because there is a line, Hugh, right? What if they were missing 39 players? Would they make them play? They're missing 51 players. So there is
a line. I think that line
is
11 players who were starters in the last two games on the COVID list. That means half your team is on the COVID list. Doug, I am going to listen very closely to Orange and Brown Talk today and Buckeye Talk every day and the College Football Survivor Pod. Both of them are out this week. And I wish you a safe and healthy weekend because I think Omicron is here. And I think Doug and I are both vaccinated. We'll be fine. But, gosh, it makes the NFL just makes turtles look fast. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned. Joined now by the poet laureate of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Hugh. I have a little Christmas tale for you this week. It was Grandpa's final Christmas. He had his favorite chair. I saw him try to smile, but it was more a weakened stare. Grandpa was a handyman. There's nothing he couldn't fix. He loved his German shepherd dogs. I think that he had six. But age and sensibility at last had had their say, and he couldn't get a seventh when the last prince passed away. The first one was as white as snow. His nose was long and pink. His scowl had the power to have made Jack London blink. What kind of present can you give, this question bears repeating, to a life that's at its limit in a chest that's barely beating? And what are presents anyway? Of what are they a part? Are they something for your closet or something for your heart? Well, my sister had the answer. There, I finally said it. She's such a lovely person, but I rarely give her credit. The look upon his face I haven't seen before or since when he opened up that figurine which looked so much like Prince. A picture in my memory I will forever see. His best friend was alive again, and, oh yes, so was he. It was such a magic moment. I hope that you all live one. I hope you get a gift like that. I hope you get to give one. That's Grandpa's Present by Tarzana Joe.
That's grand, Joe. I only heard half of it because after you mentioned Prince, I thought of my grandfather's dog, Bruno. He had like seven dogs. They were all Bruno. He just kept naming him Bruno. And so it was, you know, very easy on the grandkids. But you're right. That is magnificent. And it was your sister's present idea? I want to give her credit.
No, I take no credit. I actually have to give her all the goods.
I want everyone to go find that at TarzanaJoe.com. That's the best ad for the Tarzana Joe poetry writing business you've ever given, Joe.
Oh, well, thank you. But next week, there may be even a better one.
Well, this one can be read at TarzanaJoe.com, and if you want to order up one, go to TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com and send him a missive. Grandpa's present will be hard to duplicate, though. Joe, well done, and thank you. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Josh Mandel, former state treasurer in Ohio, is running for Senate in Ohio. His Twitter account is Josh Mandel, Ohio. Good morning, Josh. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh. Doing well.
Do I recall correctly you were a Marine in Afghanistan?
I did two tours in Iraq.
Oh, okay. So this is still an irrelevant question, but I knew you did two tours. I thought one was in Afghanistan. This morning at the Wall Street Journal, It's reported that more than 60,000 Afghan interpreters and others who have applied for visas to seek shelter have been left behind. A total of 62,000 Afghans are believed to have been left behind, the State Department officials said. Your reaction, Josh Mandel?
Well, the Biden administration has sent a message to every country on this planet and every person in that country that America, unfortunately, at least under a Biden-type administration, is not one that can be trusted to, as a partner. And it's sad that we left all these interpreters who went out there and risked their lives with Marines and soldiers doing patrols, left them behind. And, you know, Hugh, when I was in the Marine Corps, we used this system called the BAT system, a biometric system, where we would scan the iris, the eyeballs, and the faces, facial recognition of the, we called MAMs, military age males. So whether they were friends or foes, we'd scan them. We'd be out on patrols, do checkpoints, and then it'd go to a big database. In addition to Biden leaving all the assault weapons and Humvees and night vision goggles and helicopters behind, he also left behind that database, Hugh. And it's now in the hands of the Taliban. And so the Taliban is literally using that database as a kill list to go hunt down the very exact interpreters you're mentioning and anyone else who helped Americans. I mean, I think Joe Biden will go down as one of, if not the worst, commanders in chief of the U.S. military in American history.
That's a lock. Now, let me move on to the election. You retweeted, you know, the Republican Accountability Project doesn't like you. So they put out a hit piece on you, and you retweeted it. So I gather you like it. Here's what they put out. Cut, the last cut we've got.
Now, there's a lot of these squishy rhino Republicans who say, hey, it's time to move on from 2020. Let me tell you something, ladies and gents. We can't move on to 2022 until we fully investigate all of the Democrat cheating from 2020. The time for civility is over. The time for bipartisanship is over. Now is the time for fighters.
Why did you retweet that, Josh Mandel?
I believe it. I believe that if we're going to have integrity in our elections, we have to do a full proctological exam of what happened in 2020. You know, out in Arizona, they did an audit, which I think was a positive step. And I'm actually the only U.S. Senate candidate in this race to take the time to go out there to Maricopa County and see with my own two eyes. And I've called for audits in other states as well. And the left, they say, well, you know, this has all been investigated because of the court cases. The reality is 60 of the 63 court cases were dismissed on procedural grounds. They weren't argued on the merits. And because they were not argued on the merits, it means that there actually were not investigations in places like Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania and Georgia and elsewhere. And listen, I'm a big believer in transparency, Hugh. As you know, when I was state treasurer, I put the state of Ohio's checkbook online. And the thing about transparency is if you got nothing to hide, you got nothing to hide. But the people that hate transparency the most are the ones who do have something to hide. And so the fact that the Democrats are fighting so vociferously against audits and against investigations of 2020, it leads me to believe that there is something there to hide. And so what I've called for is abolishing the January 6th commission. I think it's a total waste of time and taxpayer resource, and replacing it with a November 3rd commission, which would use the full investigatory power of the federal government to investigate what happened in places like Detroit and places like Philadelphia and all over the country. And listen, we don't want the federal government making elections.
Josh, let me interrupt you. I want to ask the question to you that I asked of the five candidates who are running for governor in Minnesota. I moderated a debate up there on Wednesday night. It was this question, second round of questions. And then we don't have follow-ups, but I get follow-ups with you. Did President Biden win the constitutional majority in the Electoral College? If yes, how definitive is your conclusion? If no, please explain which states you think are in dispute and why.
I do not believe he won. I think Trump won. I think Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Georgia all of those states need to be fully investigated, and none of them have. It's the Democrats are fighting it tooth and nail. And my question is, if you're afraid of investigation, if you're afraid of transparency, what do you have to hide? Like, what is it that you have to hide?
Josh, so there is no evidence for that that has been adduced in a court of law. Am I not correct?
Well, there hasn't been investigations, Hugh. I mean that's the reality, is like there have not been audits. And so, you know, I believe from a multitude of conversations I've had with people in those states about what was going on in the mail-in ballots, what was going on in the early voting periods, what was going on with ballots miraculously appearing after the polls closed, and let's investigate it. And so I believe,
Josh, let me now I am going to push back, because you're a friend and you've been on this show for many, many years. If you set up a precedent of enough people complain about election, we will have an audit wherever people complain in the absence of adduced evidence between the election and the certification, every election in every state for every office will be called into question, and no one will ever believe. It's a profoundly delegitimizing and destabilizing proposition you're putting forward. Are you aware of how destabilizing and delegitimizing it is?
Well, I'm not calling for doing it in every precinct in every state in the union, but in many, many of these states where Biden, you know, where the media reported that Biden won, there has been so many reports of nefarious activity, and I think it's worth investigating. And
did you think when Democrats said Bush was selected, not elected, that it was legit? I didn't. I thought it was profoundly disruptive of American democracy. I thought Al Gore set a terrible precedent for America when he did that.
Remember, there was an investigation. They investigated every one of those ballots down there in Broward County and the counties around it. I mean, they literally did an audit. They investigated it. And
yeah, but I literally wrote the book, If It's Not Close, They Can't Cheat, and did the history of election fraud. If you're not within 1,000 disputed ballots and you cannot bring those 1,000 disputed ballots within a timely period in front of an election judge, or in the case of Al Franken and Norm Coleman, before a three-judge panel, you can't ever prove it. What you're suggesting would be, I think, tell me if you think I'm just nuts and I'm a friend, it would be destructive of democracy.
I do not think you're nuts, but I also do not think that it would be destructive of democracy.
So
listen, public funds are audited. Public votes should be audited as well.
But what are you using for this? And have you put out a list of the cities and the audits that you want done and the reasons why? Because, I, you know, you're a lawyer, I'm a lawyer. You can't just go to court. You'll get your team will be thrown out and you will be sanctioned. If you show, you can file anything you want in court, but if it's completely without merit, without predicate, you get sanctioned. What have you got, Josh?
Well, what I'm talking about is not in a court of law, but actually doing what they did in Arizona, doing a forensic audit in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, in Wisconsin, in Georgia. And I think after a forensic audit, after an investigation, you know, we'll see that so much of the smoke there exists because of fire.
What happened in Arizona? Because I'm unaware of any serious claim that Arizona is in dispute. And in fact, I'm unaware of any serious claim of any state that is justiciable and based on other than anger over change. You know, look, I do think we have a big area to talk about election reform, make it easy to vote and hard to cheat. I think Pennsylvania's maneuverings were very bad, though the Republicans sponsored them. I think there's a lot that Republicans can say, but I don't think Arizona's in doubt. Do you?
I mean, I've been talking to my friend Wendy Rogers out there and some other people.
I know Wendy. I campaigned for Wendy 10 years ago. I knew her before you did. She's Air Force major, right? Air Force Lieutenant Colonel.
Hugh, can I talk about some reforms that I think...
I want to talk about Arizona, because I don't think Arizona's in doubt, and I like it, Wendy. It's just not in doubt. The audit's over. Why bring it up?
Well, I've been campaigning on election integrity all over the state of Ohio, and so I think it's a relevant issue to bring up, and that's why I talk about it all over Ohio. That's why I'm talking about it on your show right now.
Well, I think it is. I think election integrity matters a lot, but Arizona isn't that. Arizona was audited. They found nothing. And to bring it up is to wave a false flag, isn't it?
No, I don't think by virtue of bringing it up, I'm waving waving a false flag. I mean, I think the Democrats are afraid of transparency. Definitely with the election.
Josh, we only have a minute left. That's a talking point. I'm your friend. I've known you for a long time, and I'm a lawyer. Arizona is not in doubt. Can you agree with that?
Listen, Hugh, I'm not an expert in Arizona election laws, but in talking to Wendy, who has spent an inordinate amount of time on it, you know, I trust what she has to say. Better than what I know and better than what you know, she's out there, and you know, she tends to believe, based on the investigations and audit out there, that it is in dispute.
I don't know what she believes because I haven't talked to her about it. But if there's evidence, they should have brought it to a court and it should have been adjudicated. And to raise it, you know, I just think the answer is a lot of sloppy stuff happened in 2020 and we're going to fix everything. But we're not questioning the legitimacy of President Biden, as you began the interview doing. So I'm going to give you one last crack at the bat. You really don't think Joe Biden is legitimately elected? Because I think he is. And I think Republicans must say so and then campaign for election transparency and reform.
I do not think he is. I think if there were investigations all over the country, I think an audit, forensic audits, I think we'd found that actually Trump was the victor in the election. And you know, something we haven't talked about here at all is Mark Zuckerberg putting in $400 million of big tech money to you know, to sway these elections all over the country. And I know we only have a minute left, but I mean, I think there's a lot of relevant issues to be investigated here. It's why I've called, as I mentioned, to abolish this stupid January 6th commission, replace it with the November 3rd commission, use the full investigatory power of the federal government to investigate, and then make recommendations to the states. And if, you know, if I could wave a wand, some changes I would make are, first and foremost, institute photo ID, not just vote.
Agree. Agree. But Josh, we are out of time. We'll come back and we'll talk about this later. It's different, though, than questioning the legitimacy of the president from reforming elections going forward. And that's where we'll pick it up next time. Josh Mandel, Ohio, is his Twitter account. He's running for Senate. We had a great debate. This did not come up at the debate. It'll come up at the next one, I'm sure. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home, or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172.
We're here tonight, and that's enough. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
Welcome back. I don't know if Charlie Dombek is having a wonderful Christmas time. Key City Capital, of which Charlie is a major player and partner, is a sponsor of this show and is an accountant. And this is not the time of year that accountants love particularly. Charlie Dombek, welcome back. People can find out all about you at keycitycapital.com/you. How's your year end doing, Charlie? Is the tax bill is apparently dead, but we don't know.
We don't know. If the Biden administration has its way, they'll find some loophole to enact additional increases in taxes, but I think we've dodged a major tax bullet because of a couple of reasonable senators. But yeah, this is tax season for us at our firm here. And, you know, most accountants get busy during March and April, but we're working 14, 16 hours a day right now, and we'll work through the holidays because we don't have the ability to control the cost of taxation after the fact. Most CPAs are historians. We're proactive, we're planners, and I had a new client come in yesterday and operates a furniture store here in Dallas, Texas, and had the best year he's ever had in the history of his company, made about $1.5 million. And I said, well, where's your CPA? He goes, well, he normally doesn't contact me until, you know, late February. I go, well, there's a number of things that we can do to kind of help you before the end of the year. And long story short, we boosted his salary to about $290,000 for him and his wife. And that's the cap for allocations to retirement plans. And we're able to put about $700,000 between the two of them into a defined benefit plan. So 37% of 700.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, most people don't even know about these strategies. CPAs are too lazy to kind of implement those for his clients. So we took a lot of income off the table late in his life that will make a big difference in terms of how much wealth he has ultimately to support him when he kind of retires.
Now, Charlie, I wanted to talk to you about KeyCityCapital.com/use offerings in rental real estate because inflation is here. But I'm betwixt and between. Do both in 2 minutes, Charlie, which is what do you do for taxes and things like that? And what do you offer for people who are worried about inflation? It's like 3 minutes, but do it both, please.
Well, we do two things. We offer a strategy and a planning opportunity to evaluate how you're filing and paying your income taxes. And we go through an analysis on a side-by-side, line-by-line comparison and quantify what we can do by implementing strategies that control that cost. And the reality is most individuals in America are overpaying and volunteering to overpay on their state and federal income taxes. And it's really about just being proactive and doing what others don't. And we offer that analysis on a complimentary basis to all clients. And then from a inflation perspective, one of the things that I've done recently in the last handful of weeks is done a fair amount of portfolio analysis. And a lot of clients have done very well in the indexes and the S&P 500, 18, 19, maybe 20% rate of return, but they've gotten absolutely crushed in their fixed income portfolio. In fact, I had a client that I did an analysis yesterday and had about $282,000 in a specific fixed income fund, one of the very large, ultra-low-cost funds, and he performed at 1% last year.
Ultra-low returns, too.
Ultra-low returns. I'm like, why didn't your financial advisor put you in something in fixed income that was maybe making 4 or 5%? But 1%? Come on. So what did we do? We reallocated that portion of his portfolio into two strategies. One was an asset-backed lending strategy to boost income in our asset-backed lending fund. That fund generates between a 12 and a 14% annual rate of return. So we immediately boosted his monthly income from a basic 1% annual rate of return to between 12 and 14%. And this is a guy that is retired.
Is that risky? Is that a risky investment that he did? This is not an offer to sell securities. I'm just interested in people's risk toleration.
Ultra low risk because we invest in collateralized debt instruments where there's a hard asset behind the investment that secures a loan. Done probably $700 million in loans over the last 8 years without a dollar of loss. It's an ultra-secure portion of the portfolio and is designed to replace the fixed income component of the portfolio that's performing so poorly right now in today's interest rate environment.
Charlie, we are out of time. I just want to tell people I'm going to talk to you after Christmas because I think you're going to work through Christmas about year end. We'll know what happens to BBB at that point. I also want to wish you a Merry Christmas. Go to KeyCityCapital.com/you. Charlie is a client. It's a sponsor of the show. That's an embedded segment. He pays for that. And I only let people do that, like Hillsdale and other people, when I really, really have met with them and trust them. That's the only time I do that. If you're embedded on the Hugh Hewitt Show, that's because I think your content is 100% worth hearing. Charlie Dombeck, go to KeyCityCapital.com/you. Come back. The Hillsdale Dialogue is ahead with Dr. Larry Arnn and Dean Stephen Smith. The Bard is back on center stage when we return to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.